Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Hello and welcome to the Heat Check. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I've got a level one voice strain, and I'm not sure I'll be able to finish through the podcast, but I'm going to do my best because that's the kind of grit I bring to this kind of podcast.
Is that what the MRI revealed?
Absolutely.
Can you not like swallow or breathe the entire time? They had to like go look at your voice box? That sounds awful.
Well, I don't want to freak you out by swallowing too loudly, so I'll just... I'll play it nice and low.
So, Goran Dragic news today. Level one, mild calf, left calf strain. I'm not a doctor. I don't know what level one. I don't know what the difference between one and two and level three is, if those things even exist. But that doesn't sound great because it sounds like he's going to be out for a week. Where we originally thought he was just going to miss the road trip, he would have originally been out Tuesday. And now it sounds like he's going to be out until next Thursday, Friday-ish.
Missing a total of 5 games, including the game against the Los Angeles Clippers, which was an obvious loss where we could have used his offensive firepower, particularly in the third quarter.
It's not going to be good. And the Heat, like you mentioned with the Clippers, I mean, we love ourselves some Tyler Johnson. We love ourselves some Bumpy. But without Dragic and without Mario Chalmers, because we traded him, there's not a lot of depth there. And the Heat were banking on the fact, clearly, that when they traded Chalmers, Dragic was going to be healthy, Tyler Johnson was going to be good, Bino Udrih would be sufficient. And all of those things have been true until Dragic got hurt. And that was kind of weird. I mean, I guess he got hurt in that Warriors game. I didn't see anything that really, like, I guess he bumped it or something. I don't know what happened, but he got hurt. Do you know what happened? Has there been a word on that?
I haven't heard anything in particular. I didn't see anything. I think maybe, you know, you take a knee or a kick maybe, and, you know, the adrenaline of the moment, particularly against a high-level opponent like Golden State, maybe he decided to play through it because we were close. We were in it all the way to the end. And, you know, even though it felt a little uneven, you felt like maybe Miami was right there. But I guess if maybe to the players, you always have hope that you'll be able to pull out a victory. So maybe he decided to play through it, and then things probably got worse as he was cooling off, and over the course of the evening, he probably just got progressively more and more hurt.
Well, they were within 6 with like 45 seconds left, so I don't blame him for sticking it out. I was at the game, the Warriors Heat game. I gotta tell you, the Heat, more than what they did on the court, they really took the Warriors fans kind of out of that game. I mean, I was in the game, like I said, and really every time that the Golden State fans got going, it was when they did that little thing on the scoreboard, like, make some noise, and like they were like, okay, we'll do it. And like the guy came out with a t-shirt cannon in the middle of the fourth quarter, like during the game, and like got everybody going. And people don't really see that on TV, obviously, but I don't know how different this is between other... That was my only Warriors game I've ever been to, but it seemed like all I hear is that the Warriors fans are like some of the best fans and they have the best home court. And I'm not here to dispute that or deny that or say that that's not true. But the Heat slowed the game down. They were in the game a lot, like almost gave the Warriors their first loss at home. I felt, and the Warriors were only shooting like 30% from 3-point range, which is not usually what happens there. So they took the Warriors out of that game. I was really impressed, and I was like that one Heat fan being like, yeah, that's great. Justice Winslow hit a jumper, woo! Kind of people are like looking at me. One person actually told me, like, this is in Florida, and I was like, I know that.
Thank you for the geography update, asshole.
Wait a minute.
Wow. You were able to face the fury of the Oracle Arena fans, huh? You took the challenge.
That was about it. Not gonna lie, they weren't very interactive. Everybody just kind of stared at the game, which is good as far as I'm concerned. The least amount of people I have to talk to, the better. And they were all just... The cool thing was I got free kettle chips outside. That was great.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Two bags. They were, like, very generous. Go ahead.
Well, my most recent comparison was when the Heat played at the Amway Center in Orlando, and at least half the crowd was cheering for Miami. So it's even... That's harder to make a comparison to, so I don't know. I think that's just... Having seen a few Magic games, it always seems like, you know, the energy's there for a little bit, but... No, nothing gets people fired up like the goddamn t-shirt cannon. I don't know what it is about free stuff that gets everybody drooling like Pavlov's dogs, but man, that really gets everybody fired up. It is
the Pavlov dog experience, experiment, of like humans, right? Like we just know to go freaking crazy for a t-shirt, and like the t-shirt's always like double XL. Like we're like, we'll never wear this. This is great.
Right, it's like Mardi Gras, and girls are taking their tops off, and you know, people are dangling their kids off the upper level deck, and it's like, you know, it's a t-shirt, you could probably get it outside the arena for $5. I don't see what the big deal is.
There was a long line for a free t-shirt out front, out front of my section in Oracle Arena, and it was just like around the entire arena for this one line, and I'm like, it is a t-shirt, people. It's fine, and it's an ugly t-shirt. It's like it was like a dark navy blue. I don't know what color, like a royal, I don't know, a dark navy blue with like a little Warriors logo on the chest, and like people were just like, I have to have this. I'm like, I don't know.
The sponsoring corporation that produced the t-shirt probably has a much bigger logo than the Warriors itself.
I think it was the military or something. It was for a good cause, but I don't know. It was stupid.
Always stupid to go after a long line for a t-shirt is always a bad decision. But anyway,
we digress. I think,
yeah, as we often do.
Well, the Heat played the Warriors really well. We were really happy about that game. I think everybody, pretty like not everybody, but a majority of people were happy with that effort, even though they ended up losing. It was against the Warriors in Oakland. Like that's a tough game, and without Whiteside, and we thought, okay, well maybe they'll ride that momentum of that good performance, like that solid basketball that they played, like they executed well, regardless of win or lose, they executed well. And we thought they'd bring that to LA, to Southern California, and then they did for two quarters, and then they didn't for the third and fourth quarter. They were absolute trash. And that's where we're at right now, is that they completely shit the bed in that second half. They were probably the worst half of basketball they'd have played all season. Am I right?
You cut out there for a bit, so I'm going to assume that, yes, you're right. I don't know what it is that you were saying, but I have no doubt that you were 100% correct.
That they played a really bad second half against the Clippers.
Oh, that they did. And that was undeniably. See, you were right, and so was I. I'm not sure what it was. They played really badly to start the game, right? I mean, they were like very cold shooting, and then all of a sudden Gerald Green gets hot, and you blow the doors off the game in the second quarter there, where you had a 16-point lead. And then I don't know what the hell happened at the end of halftime. And maybe that's where you need Whiteside starting, because as you've pointed out and you wrote about recently, he does very well in the third quarter and he provides that kind of boost. But unfortunately, I guess because he was coming back from injury, Eric Spoelstra elected to have him sit and come off the bench. And so maybe that was the decision that kind of bit them in the ass. Surely they were missing Goran Dragic, and that was going to hurt.
Do you think it was the Whiteside sitting in the third that really hurt them? Nobody played well.
Look, this is a completely different story if Chris Bosh doesn't go 3 of 11. And a lot of his shots were makeable ones, particularly to start the game. So, I mean, right there, let's say he hits two or three of those shots early on where he starts feeling it gets hot. And next thing you know, instead of a 16-point lead, it's a 20-point-plus lead. And the Clippers decide, you know what, we can't. Behind the powerhouse of Lance Stephenson and Cole Aldrich, they decide they don't have what it takes.
I can't believe you said those words.
Well, yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah, Cole Aldrich. I mean, cast off of New York Knicks, and here he is floating these awkward-ass hook shots over the best shot blocker in the league. I don't know what it was. I don't think he was getting particularly good position. I'd have to rewatch it, but I kind of don't want to because it was a little painful. But it didn't seem like he was getting great position there, but he's just throwing this sweeping I don't know, I want to say like a crippled version of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I know that's terrible, but he's throwing up these, horrible looking sky hooks that were falling. Every one of them was falling. I don't know what his final percentages were yesterday, but they were, it seemed like they were all falling, and it was terrible. And so I don't know. I think it was just a combination of different things, right? I mean, if Bosch hits those shots, obviously we probably pull out a victory. It doesn't happen, but it didn't work out that way. And next thing you know, you're dissecting whether or not it was Dragic's impact or his lack of impact because he wasn't in the game, and you're dissecting whether or not Whiteside, who's going to make some problems because that's just the way he is, he's going to complain about coming off the bench, whether or not he was getting enough touches. And it's a possibility, maybe he's a guy who's so proud and wants to get those numbers, and he as you've proven, he does very well in the third quarter, so maybe he just felt like he wasn't contributing and he kind of checked out mentally, which is something that's a problem.
And Jason Leisure of the Palm Beach Post kind of hinted towards that, well, not so much hinted, but quoted the Heat players as much as saying like our mentality isn't where it needs to be right now. Dwayne Wade, like you said, it grabbed Whiteside in the middle of the game and said, you got to be better than this. You got to execute that pick and roll right. You're not doing it right. To be honest, I don't know what the psyche of this Heat team is. And I know, listeners, we started talking about Goran Dragic and we got way off track. We'll get back there, but let's talk about this first. I think the psyche of this team is very fragile, especially for where a veteran team should be. Very early in the season, this team needed a rallying cry from Udonis Haslem at halftime, where he was allegedly throwing water bottles and using a lot of profanity. That shouldn't happen. Like, that's great that it did happen and that they have that veteran leadership. And I don't know if this happens with the Spurs or the Warriors and we just don't hear about it, but for a regular season game, the fact that the Heat can't get up and go for one of those, for just a regular season game, where this regular season matters for the Heat, they really need a second seed. They need a two seed. They need to avoid Cleveland as long as possible in the playoffs if they want to have any chance of getting to the finals. And it just seems like this team needs a kick in the ass more than it really should need it, and especially for a team that knows what it takes, with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and even Luol Deng, who knows what it takes to get deep in the playoffs. To get there, to get deep in the playoffs, to get to the finals, they know what kind of energy it takes. And I just feel like this team doesn't have it. And it sounds like a dumb thing. It sounds like oh, they just don't have the energy because they have so much talent. But it's the lack of energy that I see on a night-to-night basis, of consistent energy throughout the game. It's there. It's there during certain quarters and certain halves, but not just for 4 quarters, not for 48 minutes. And it's just a weird thing, right?
I mean, you go back to even during the Big Three era where they're kind of coasting through the regular season, and the presumption at that point was, well, it didn't really matter because they were going to be able to turn it up a notch in the playoffs. And they always did. I mean, they lost two playoff series in 16 opportunities over the course of 4 years. That's a pretty good record. So clearly they were capable of turning it up, and maybe there's just that thought process that during the 82 games of a regular season, they don't need to go all out all the time. And you're facing some adversity because you've got problems with the lineup, you're on the road, so you're already facing another challenge there, and maybe they just kind of check out. I don't know how to quantify it. I really don't. I don't know how to look at what's going on with them and say, don't you guys realize that you're playing badly, that you're sacrificing any opportunity you have at postseason success? And it could be a sense of, team-wide complacency. I don't get that sense. I didn't get that early on in the season. I think when you make a trade for Goran Dragic, when you get a rookie like Justice Winslow, when you've got Hassan Whiteside before a contract year, all those elements seem to scream, we're making a run here. This is built for now. We're going to go as deep as we can. And part of that means, as you just pointed out, getting good playoff seeding because you want to avoid facing the very best team in the Eastern Conference and one of the best teams in the NBA in general. So either they don't understand what's at stake or they don't care, but either way, it does seem a little dangerous there. And I'm not sure if there is any way of fixing it. We anticipated this. We talked about it before the season. It's been talked about. The early start to the season was generally very, very favorable. I mean, there were some games here and there that were going to be dangerous pratfalls, but for overall, a lot of home games, a pretty favorable schedule against some weak teams. Then all of a sudden you go on the road against some very, very tough ones. And I remember writing about this early on. It was, you know, the January of death, and we're talking about it. We talked about it last podcast, and here we are, you know, 12 of 13 games on the road, or 11 of 12 games on the road. I mean, that's a really dangerous stretch against some really high-level competition to boot. So if they're going to go in there with that kind of attitude that maybe the regular season doesn't matter much, they're going to miss out on the playoffs. Or they're going to be an eighth seed where they're going to wind up facing Cleveland and losing in five or six games.
Yeah, I feel like it seems really easy for us to say, why don't they have more energy? Why don't they view it more importantly? But the quotes and the reaction from like the guys like Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, it's like they don't think that it's acceptable, which is good. They right. say that our mindset's not where it needs to be. We need to have more energy. We need to be more dedicated to these games. You know, we've heard those quotes over and over again. I don't know what it takes. We're not in that locker room. We're not the coach of that team. We don't play in the NBA. We don't play 82 games a year. We haven't been on this Heat team that's been to four straight finals just, you know, 2 years ago. I don't know why it's so hard to get that energy, to get that urgency where it needs to be, but it's clearly not there. And then you have that other issue of the Goran Dragic injury that clearly was an issue against the Clippers, but I don't think it's not an excuse, but it was an issue, right? Like it can't be an excuse because they were missing Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. We were only missing Goran Dragic, who hasn't even quite figured it out with the Heat. So the Clippers were missing way more than what the Heat were missing, and they still blew us out in that game. But going forward, Dragic is going to be missing another week, and that's going to hurt. Like that does not help Miami's chances on this road trip. It's going to be very difficult. But he'll be back. And when he gets back, it'll take a while for him to get back into the groove of things, so to speak. And the Heat will continue to try to build that chemistry. But that doesn't help.
So what is it? Break down, or maybe we should break down what the absence of Dragic does to Miami.
Okay. Well, Tyler Johnson starts. Dwayne Wade is the shooting guard.
Well, starting he did it yesterday, right? I mean, Beno Udrih did.
That's true. But Tyler Johnson got most of the minutes, am I right? Like, he ended up finishing the game, at least.
Well, if he finished the game, it's probably because he's coming back from injury and he needed playing time. But I think that's mostly due to the fact that he's a little bit younger and can finish out a game. And they were already getting blown out. At that point, I think it didn't really matter much who was in there or not. So I'd say probably for the sake of keeping his, you know, Spoelstra's a big fan of not wanting to mess up his rotations. He started Justice against the Warriors, right? Which was a surprising move because he normally wants, but maybe he feels that since Justice isn't contributing much offensively, maybe it's a good thing to have him in there as an added bonus defensively. And it certainly helped. They were able to contend with him early on, which was surprising. So,
well, and the first time that happened, I mean, the first time, you know, he started Chris Anderson, right, in Whiteside's place, the first time Whiteside couldn't make a start.
Right.
And Anderson was god-awful. That was that Pacers game. And he figured, like, well, that's not going to work. I have to start Justice in this spot.
In the Clippers matchup, Udrih played 28 minutes. Tyler Johnson played 29.
Yeah.
Udrih went 3 of 7 for 8 points. Tyler Johnson went 2 of 7 for 8 points. So neither one distinguished themselves as a potential starter in the long run. And if I had to guess in their next matchup against Denver, I would probably expect a veteran like Beno Udrih to probably continue starting with Tyler Johnson coming on the bench. Because right now, it's just, I mean, the bench is so, you know, inconsistent. You need some kind of, you know, high production there, or the hope that high production. And Tyler Johnson can always have a much bigger game than I think Beno Udrih.
A good Udrih Tyler is that Johnson fourth game. Guard, but he's kind of better than a fourth guard. But so it makes sense to start him and then maintain as much integrity of that lineup and rotation set that Spoelstra has as possible. So either way, Tyler Johnson, Beno Udrih, they're going to be splitting that time among Goran Dragic's minutes. Vacated minutes, so. But either way, neither of them are somebody that steps up and can be that level of Goran Dragic. that really hurts this team. I mean, this team that and I wrote recently that Goran Dragic has been shooting 50% from 3-point range his last 10 games. For a team that really lacks 3-point shooting, Goran Dragic was really important the last few games, as the numbers show. Beno Udrih is not shooting 50%. I mean, he was 2-for-3 against the Clippers, and that's fantastic, but that's not going to last. And Tyler Johnson has been Miami's best 3-point shooter, but it's really not even a replacement as much as Miami needs as many 3-point shooters as possible.
Yeah, I think as we've talked about before, Tyler Johnson's numbers are due to a relatively small sample size, so over limited playing time. I don't know that you're necessarily going to get consistent shooting out of Tyler, but he still provides a spark, which is why he's probably on the bench there. So I think, you know, Beno is solid. He's not as quick as Goran, obviously. And without Dragic there, you don't have another capable ball handler who can speed up the tempo of the game,
right,
who can find that seam, the defense, and score at the rim, which is what he had been doing recently. He had a really big game against the Phoenix Suns, his old team. Whether it was for, you know, revenge purposes or what have you, it's been the only win of the road trip so far. So you have to consider the fact that, you know, his presence there certainly is a positive for Miami. And without him there, it'll be a tough thing for them to overcome. So, I mean, his shooting, his speed, just his overall presence, his ability to handle it.
Yeah, his creativity. Like, Beno's fine, right? He's got that move where he does that Steve Nash thing where he just, like, dribbles into the hoop, comes back around. I mean, that's the same stuff we had with Mario Chalmers. There wasn't necessarily any creativity from the point guard position, and that's what we're obvious. And we know that Goran's better than Udrih and all that, but that's really, I think, what we're missing is that creativity, that this offense that really needs creativity to kind of make that extra spacing work, or create that extra spacing to make this offense work. That's what we're missing.
Yeah, I think defenders will be a lot more likely to worry about Dragic on the floor than they will Beno Udrih at this point in his career.
Yeah.
Or Tyler Johnson, you know, for all that he brings as a guy off the bench, he's not going to earn that respect. We've seen him not get those calls from referees in the past. So, I mean, he doesn't have the same kind of veteran cachet that a guy like Goran Dragic does. So,
this narrative that Tyler Johnson might be better for the starting lineup than Goran Dragic?
No, I do not. I think Heat fans probably are a little concerned about the money that they're paying a guy like Dragic, that maybe his numbers aren't off the chain, and then he's not blowing up, you know, the record books here or anything like that, considering how much you're paying him. But it was a process of him kind of learning the ropes, and certainly they've been playing better of late. And part of that is as a result of his presence and his comfort level, his familiarity with the team. He talked about it, where everybody wants the ball, you know, knowing where people are going to spot up for an open shot. I mean, those are the things that a point guard needs to know. He didn't figure those out last year. And part of that was because, you know, half the roster was gone. And this year you've got even more additions to the team of guys like Justice Winslow or, you know, Gerald Green and things of that sort. And so you see that there was a chemistry between him and Green. And part of that is because they were, you know, a tandem when they were playing together for the Phoenix Suns. So there's a comfort level already established there, and it's worked. Hell, he's even had a good comfort level with Amar'e Stoudemire in the few minutes that he's played there. He's had a way of collapsing the defense a little bit, drawing them in, and then finding a way to get the ball to Amar'e so he can finish at a dunk. We've seen some open dunks from Amar'e Stoudemire as a result of him playing with Goran Dragic out there. So, you know, I don't know why it is that people thought he was going to be a savior, and because he struggled somewhat, he hasn't been exactly as productive as they'd hoped. But, I mean, I think clearly Goran Dragic is a better player than Tyler Johnson at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, Seth Partnow of Nylon Calculus had a pretty good piece lately about how we need to be wary of five-man lineup, or really just lineup statistics in general, advanced stats, you know, whatever, analytics, anything you want to call it, to be wary of them because they are typically, and, you know, by definition, very small sample sizes. He even talks about, like, the death lineup that the Warriors have with Draymond Green right. center as being a very small sample size. While clearly the eye test shows that it's good, it's hard to just go off of the raw numbers lineup by lineup throughout the league. which a lot of people tend to do, especially like you and I in the blogosphere over here. We use a lot of lineup stats in general, and to be wary of those. And that's very appropriate for the Tyler Johnson numbers, because a lot of the Tyler Johnson numbers as, and I'm gonna add him here, bro. Mike Ryan, producer of the Dan Le Batard Show, has been at the forefront of saying Goran Dragic is not as good as Tyler Johnson in the starting lineup. He's not as best suited. And like he says, the basis of his argument is based on these five-man lineups, that Tyler, along with the starting unit, has been better than Goran Dragic, but it's at a much smaller sample size. So we need to be careful of using those numbers. And I just know, like I said, the creativity that Goran Dragic brings as opposed to a Beno Udrih or Tyler Johnson, that means a lot for a team that doesn't have a lot of creativity on offense. His savvy, his three-point shooting, the way that he can be a threat near the rim more so than any other point guard on this roster, even more than Dwayne Wade at this point. He's more of a threat at the rim than Dwayne Wade. That goes a long way, and that affects the entire offense, and it seeps into everything that the Heat do offensively. So they're going to miss him a lot while he's out.
What has he been saying, Mike Ryan? That is, you know, you say that he's leading the charge. What exactly is his beef? Is he just using the numbers from the five man lineups as his basis of his argument?
No, the advanced stats, the five man lineups clearly show that the Heat are better with Tyler Johnson. I guess Tyler's on off numbers, and I'm trying to find it right now. I mean, based on NBA.com, Tyler Johnson's plus minus is a 3.0, and Dragic's is a 2.8. It's not a drastic difference. While they're on the, I'm sorry, that's not their plus minus. That's their on court plus minus. So, and when they're off the court, the Heat are minus 0.8 when Dragic is not playing. So the Heat are a net minus when Dragic is off the court. And they're a plus when Tyler Johnson is on the court or off the court. So I don't know if I'm looking at the same stats that this guy's looking at, that Mike Ryan is looking at. I honestly didn't have the numbers with me, but he's saying that the five-man units with Tyler Johnson have been more productive than the five-man units with Goran Dragic. And like I said, those numbers are typically a small sample size. I mean, there's no doubt that Dragic has played a much larger sample with the starters than Tyler Johnson has, and not to mention that it's against other starters. While Tyler Johnson being in there is going to not be against typically the opponent's starters, right? So that's the other thing about those lineup numbers, is that a lot of the bench guys, their numbers are inflated because they're going against other bench guys. So I think we got to be careful when we're looking at the advanced stats. But moving on to some other things. Hassan Whiteside is one of those other guys that the advanced stats aren't favorable to him. And we talked about this in the last podcast.
Right.
I'm not really a believer in that. I think Hassan Whiteside makes a big difference when he's in the game, and that's clear, especially at a rim protection perspective. But the story behind Whiteside right now, does he fit long-term with the Heat, right? He's making less than $1 million right now. They're going to have to pay him. They don't have his bird rights. It's either he's an unrestricted free agent in the rawest sense of the word. Do they have to re-sign him? Should they re-sign him? And to how much money should they re-sign him to? Because he's probably going to get a max offer from somewhere. Now, whether or not he takes that or he takes... Reports are saying that the Heat know how much that they are willing to spend on Whiteside, and it's not max. At least that's the reports going on right now. Whether or not he takes a max from someone else, or he decides, you know, I don't want to stay with the Heat because they gave me my chance and I feel comfortable here, I'll take less money and stay with the Heat. We don't know what Whiteside's going to do. Keeping all that out of the conversation, because there's just no way to predict that, should the Heat re-sign Whiteside? Is he the right fit with this team going long-term? What are your thoughts?
I think it depends on whether or not you can bring in another replacement. It kind of reminds me of the situation that Thunder were faced with last year, or last offseason, where they had acquired Enes Kanter. They were hoping to make a splash in order to convince Kevin Durant to remain in Oklahoma City, and they added the offensive firepower there, but Durant missed the last half of the season, and so they missed the playoffs. And they had kind of bookmarked this money on their books there to pay Cantor anyway, and then he wound up getting a max offer sheet from Portland Trailblazers, and they had no choice but to match, because either you let him walk and you still have this amount of salary cap space earmarked for Enes Kanter and you can't spend it on anybody else, or you just pay the person and hope that he is a valued contributor. They wound up overpaying for him. I think Sam Presti and the Thunder front office know this. I think everybody else knows this. You can criticize the team if you want to. I'm not going to go so far as to say that it's been a bad deal or a great deal, but he's been productive. He has his weaknesses on defense. Everybody knows this. I think it's a similar situation with Whiteside. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't just let him walk unless you're going to be able to bring in another quality free agent to fill his place. And although a lot of people have been linking Miami to Kevin Durant, that's probably a little unrealistic. Now, if I were to tell you or anybody that you had a chance at signing Al Horford, would you rather overspend perhaps on Hassan Whiteside, who might have a greater comfort level here, but given his attitude problems or any other issues that he may have had over the course of his career, wouldn't you rather have a trusted veteran like Al Horford? I think most people would prefer Al Horford to Hassan Whiteside. I think he's a better fit overall. I think his personality is certainly more in line with the Heat culture, whatever that might be. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about it before. We know what it is. It's hard to quantify. It's a little vague, but it's clearly something that exists. And I don't know that Whiteside's a big part of that. I think he's a little self-serving. I don't think he's particularly intelligent. And I mean, I hate to even attack him personally or anything like that. I don't know him personally. I just, based on the way he comes across in person or in interviews, he seems very, very self-serving, and I don't know that it necessarily is a good fit for the kind of culture that Miami has established over the 20 years of Pat Riley's tenure here.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that notion.
I think a lot of people would.
That
I think
he's
a lot
self-serving?
Of people would. Yeah, I think so. I think people see – look, he's
– I don't think people would disagree with – I think people would disagree that that's a detriment to the team.
Oh, sure.
But nobody would disagree with the notion that he is that. That's a personality trait.
Yeah, I think some people probably think he's great. Because, again, and I think you and I have talked about it before, thinking about the lineage of centers here in Miami, you know, Alonzo Mourning, even going back as far as Ronnie goddamn Cicely. I mean, you have Cicely, you have Alonzo, you have Shaquille O'Neal, and then you have the shit list of, you know, Zilgaskis, Dexter Pittman, et cetera, Eric Dampier, and of course, Joel the Warden Anthony. And then all of a sudden, you've got this return to prominence at the center position for Miami and Hassan and Whiteside. I think a great portion of Heat fans love his flexing, his shot blocking. They don't care about analytics. We're talking, you know, it's so hard to differentiate, I think, for many of us in basketball Twitter, because we eat, sleep, breathe basketball much more than the average person does, and we talk about it. And so our thoughts, as much as we'd like to say that we influence the general public, I think we wind up influencing ourselves more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones going to be more apt to read, you know, this piece or that piece talking about their, you know, box plus minus and you know, off-court, on-court numbers. You know, the guy in the street sees Hassan Whiteside at 7 feet with a 7'7" reach, blocking shots, packing guys in the paint, and going, shit, that's the kind of player I want. I love that guy.
Yeah.
So, and they think it's funny when he says, I'm trying to boost my All-Star rating or my, you know, my 2K rating. They think that's great stuff. So,
well, I don't know if my dad is the barometer, but I talk to my dad quite often about the Heat, and I'm like, well, what he actually texted me, I don't know, last weekend or a weekend before that, saying, I don't know if Whiteside's the best fit for this team. And I'm not saying that my dad is the average Heat fan. I think he's a little bit above average as far as, you know, thinking about the game, just because, not to brag, I'm his son and I talk to him about stuff. But and we have this great podcast. We really know what we're talking about over here at the Heat Check. But, you know, he reached out to me. I don't know what the average Heat fan thinks, because like you and I said, we are, you know, entrenched in this blogosphere, this Heat Twitter, that really tends to think about what's going on. I don't know. That's a whole other argument, is like, how much do we influence each other about opinions and what's really going on in basketball? Like, it's this little microcosm of a universe that we're kind of dealing with here. But in general, The Whiteside thing is fascinating because you talk about building a team, and Al Horford would clearly be a better fit. And I've always said, if you're giving me the choice between Whiteside and Horford, give me Horford. I know Whiteside is homegrown. We discovered him. We've created him. He found his position in the NBA here in Miami. But given the choice, give me Horford every time because he does the things that the Heat want to do. However, we don't know if Horford wants to leave Atlanta. We don't know if he does want to leave Atlanta, if he wants to leave Atlanta for Miami. We don't know anything we don't have any idea what Horford wants to do, right? Because the only thing we know is the only thing we talk about is Kevin Durant. We have no idea if Horford wants to leave Atlanta. And from what I hear is that he's probably not going to leave Atlanta for Miami. That he has no reason to do that. So the idea that we could just grab Horford instead of Whiteside is one thing, because in the NBA you're really forced with what you can get. And Miami was in a great position where they were able to get LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. But you know who wasn't? Chicago, the Knicks, the Cavs. They were not in position. They wanted that. They were trying to do that, but they couldn't have it. And the Heat did. And they had that four-year historical run, which we all know about. So the Heat might be in a position where they have to pay Whiteside because they don't have a better option. And Whiteside is quite the player, as we know. He's a great shot blocker. He's a top 10, he's a top 5, top 10 rim protector. Like, he has the things that he does well. We just don't know if it fits with what Miami wants to do. Right. So that's really the conundrum that Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and Andy Ellsberg are going to be in, is deciding, do we just cut bait, even if we don't know if we can get Al Horford, and just say this guy doesn't fit? Because, I mean, if you think about what the Heat want, they, from the center position or just in general, they want passing, unselfish ball movement. They want to be able to run the floor, and they want to be able to stretch the floor with shooting. And Whiteside does neither of those things. Whiteside doesn't do any of that. He does other things that are great, but he doesn't do the things that the Heat and Eric Spoelstra really want to do.
So, I mean, it could just be a matter of them saying, we've used this traditional center over the last 2 years now. Maybe we're prepared to move to another smaller lineup. It worked when we had Chris Bosh during the big three era start at center, so why not move to that again and maybe concentrate on building other wing positions, other wing defenders? You've got Justice Winslow. He'll probably be the natural starter, fill in for Luol Deng, who will probably leave in free agency. I'm not sure what kind of a deal he'll get elsewhere, but it's probably a safe bet to say you're not going to bring Luol back. As great a veteran as he was, as inconsistent as he's been, I know a lot of people out there who are Heat fans don't like him very much.
Well, they're not going to bring him back at even close to that price, right? So if nobody's going to offer him, the Heat might say, look, we'll give you the league minimum.
Is he a league minimum guy now? Has he gotten to that point?
No, he's not. He's worth more than that, but at the same time, he's also worth less than the $10 million we're paying him this year.
Three-year, $9 million.
Yeah, he might be at a situation where he's like, you know what? I've made my money. I've made more than what I probably deserve these last 2 years. And I don't want to move again because I've been in Cleveland for a long time and I love that. Or I'm sorry, he was with Chicago for a long time. He loved that. Then he bounced to Cleveland. Then he bounced to Miami. He might be at a stage in his career where he's like, I don't want to move again. I'll just sign with the league minimum in Miami and I'm fine. In Miami, you know, might just say, look, we'll give you the league minimum. But either way, that's not even the point. The point, I think you're right. Like, we should focus less on what center can we replace Whiteside with. We're not getting DeMarcus Cousins. We're not getting Al Horford. Or we may not get those guys, right? But it might be a situation where they replace Whiteside with a wing player, like a Nick Batum or something like that, and then you move Bosh back to the five. Whether or not you can convince Chris Bosh to do that full-time again is a whole other story.
Now, you know, it's funny that you bring this up and thinking about this, even as we're kind of winging it here, obviously, as we often do during the podcast. But
that's what we do.
Yeah, but we're talking about this, and we've been working, at least I think I have, and I think you have as well, we've been working under the presumption that they're looking to bring in the biggest name possible, because that's generally what Miami does. They at least get a meeting with the biggest name out there, and they've had success bringing them in. But do you think that they have a clear vision for what this team wants to be, or where they want this team to be next year and beyond? And you'd think that they would, when they have a guy who's as pass happy as McRoberts there for a couple more years, that you have a guy like Goran Dragic on the roster, even a guy like Chris Bosh, who's good at driving to the rim and also good from outside, but they've been kind of hamstrung by having Dwayne Wade on the roster. Now that Wade's getting a little older and he's a free agent next year, what do you think is Miami's vision or Pat Riley and the front office's vision for this team in the future? Because that will shape their free agent, acquisitions. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily, or their pursuits, rather. It doesn't necessarily determine who they're going to be able to acquire. They may wind up, like you said, being stuck, quote unquote, stuck, bringing a guy like Luol Deng back or Hassan Whiteside back, but that might not fit in line with what they want to do. And I don't know that they have that clear goal laid out as far as the team is concerned.
I don't think they do either, because we know what plan A is, right? You let Whiteside walk, you bring in Kevin Durant, everything's great.
Sure. That's
That's
plan A
plan A,
for
though, right?
29 other teams.
Yeah. So the question really is, what's plan A minus and plan B? And the reason it's
If
so.
you've got Kevin Durant at plan A, I think any other plan is H or below that, okay? Because I
Right,
think, I mean,
exactly.
the distance between having Kevin Durant on your roster and having anybody else is a pretty big one.
Absolutely. So is that plan H going to be, let's wait another year because Durant might re-sign for 1 year with Oklahoma
And
City,
that's likely.
and
That's
it's
likely.
likely, right? Like everybody, all the smart people say, this is not the summer of Kevin Durant. Next summer is the summer of Kevin Durant when he can make nearly $30 million because of salary cap things that we don't need to get into because it's not that kind of podcast, but
And not just that, but also, as you and I have talked about, the potential, separation from Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka
right.
also, who become free agents in 2017. So
Absolutely.
Oklahoma City's in a pivotal point in their franchise development.
So is that the plan B? Is the plan B to wait one more year and just ride this thing out? If that's the case, they don't sign White. As we know, Pat Riley won't sign Whiteside to a long-term deal because his
Right.
plan is to go for Kevin Durant in 2017. And if that's the case, then they might just get a stopgap center or move Bosch to center and get a stopgap power stretch four or something like that. Is that plan B? Is plan B to just say, you know what? We're not going to wait 2 years for KD because Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are in the twilight of their careers. We got to get the best next player available. Let's go after that. And that might be Al Horford or Nick Batum or something, or Brook Lopez or something like that,
DeMar
where
DeRozan, right? Isn't
DeMar
that a popular
DeRozan,
name?
sure, fine. That would be awful. I really hope that doesn't happen, but
No, okay. Now that's interesting because obviously I've seen some people on the internet claim that DeMar DeRozan would be a great fit for Miami. What is your issue with him?
it's one more guy that needs the ball to be effective, and I just don't know that's where the Heat need to go. DeMar DeRozan has certainly become more efficient this year, and I really like him with Toronto. Don't get me wrong. I think DeMar DeRozan has been really, really cool with Toronto this season. But for Miami, I mean, what are you going to do? You play him at small forward, then you're playing a Dragic, Dwayne Wade, DeMar DeRozan. I know he's kind of a shooting guard. He's really a shooting guard, and he plays that way. Like now you're playing this three out lineup with what, Justice Winslow and Chris Bosh as your front court. I just don't see that as viable.
You're going to lose a whole hell of a lot of floor spacing as well, because
And I
DeRozan's
don't
not a very good shooter.
he's not a good perimeter shooter. He's gotten better, but he's still not good.
It's 29% for the year. He's
Yeah,
not
he used
good.
to be like 23%. So it's better but not good at all. And I don't know if I like unless you're planning on bringing him off the bench, but I imagine DeMar DeRozan would have a lot better offers than coming off the bench from Miami.
Do you know what he would be? He would be the guy who would take over. He would be the next evolution of having somebody exactly like Dwayne Wade on the roster, I think.
Yeah, you couldn't play them both at the end of games. Could not do it because they would fight.
No, we're already seeing that problem because of Justice Winslow's lack of perimeter shooting,
Yep.
where
And
they're laying off him completely and they're double teaming other better shooters.
so I think Miami's vision of this team, and if we go even back to last summer, Pat Riley went after LaMarcus Aldridge, and as reports say, kind of accidentally influenced him to go to the Spurs instead. Whatever, it
Yeah, no,
happens.
that's right.
But let's just imagine for a second that he got LaMarcus Aldridge. Then he would have had what, Chris Bosh and LaMarcus Aldridge as starters, almost like what they have with Duncan and Aldridge in San Antonio, and Whiteside coming off the bench, a la Tristan Thompson kind of thing. Offensive rebound machine, defensive rim protector, comes in when they need him. That's the only way that that works. So, and obviously Riley wanted that. So I think the plan for this team would be to get Horford, right? Pair him with Bosch and then convince Whiteside to come off the bench for less money, saying, look, nobody's going to, we know how to use you. We've discovered you. We created you. Only you can hang out with DJ Khaled down here because he's not going to travel to anywhere else to hang out with you.
Charlotte.
Well, yeah, he might go to Charlotte. DJ Khaled might go to Charlotte too. But I think that's what everybody's saying. Like, you know, Hassan Whiteside's from North Carolina. He might go to Charlotte. I completely agree with that. But even so, that would be Riley's next best thing, right? Behind Kevin Durant is to sign Horford and then convince Whiteside to come off the bench for those two guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Get a couple better floor spacers, a couple shooters in there into the mix. I think our defense is fine. You know, if you replace Winslow if you replace Deng with Winslow in the starting lineup, and you've got a starting lineup of Horford, Bosch, Winslow, I guess Wade, if you re-sign him, and Goran Dragic, I mean, that's a pretty solid team.
I mean, I think there's a lot of guys. I think you can even go after like a Ryan Anderson. And if Horford doesn't work out and if Whiteside decides to walk and you bring Ryan Anderson into the mix, and then you can kind of go with that whole inverted offense thing where you have Ryan Anderson and Chris Bosh, who are both good, not like good for centers or power forwards, good three-point shooters, right? And you can kind of
invert that offense. You know who would fit perfectly with Miami?
Who?
Josh McRoberts.
Yeah, we should get him. Where is he at?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a good question because he's a guy who, you know, provides some floor spacing, really moves the ball well, can finish at the rim, you know, low maintenance kind of guy. He's teammates love playing with him. That's a guy who you'd want on the roster. Somebody like that who'd really help a second unit out, maybe even start occasionally if you've got an injury. Could you imagine it? You could have played him, a couple games ago against the Warriors when Whiteside was out. You could have started him. He would have been a great fit there.
Perfect.
What the hell happened?
So many injuries. It's not unique, right, to us. I mean, it happened everywhere he's been. Except for Charlotte, really.
the one season under the magician, Steve Clifford.
I don't know. McRoberts, that's so frustrating because he would be perfect for this team. You're right. I don't know. But the Heat might try to trade him. They might try to trade Chris Anderson. Do you see any moves here at the trade deadline happening for Miami?
Do I see any moves happening? I'm going to say no, but I think I've been so wrong in the past. I'll say it. I've been so bad about predicting exactly. We did it last year, too. I think you and I both were like, no way. This team is set. This is a lost season. Nothing's going to happen.
Yep.
Goran fucking Dragic. I mean, there you go. He trades away two first-round draft picks. I mean, I don't think either of us saw that one coming.
So let's play this game.
And again, we didn't know the extent of Chris Bosh's lung issues.
Let's play this game, then. If we are completely wrong and the Heat swing for the fences... Because I don't think that the Heat can make it. I just don't see it. I just don't see what move they make, right? Like, they'd love to get rid of Birdman, but who's taking that contract? They'd love to get McRoberts, but who's taking that contract? And it's a long-term contract. If we're completely wrong and the Heat do swing for the fences and hit the home run, who's it going to be for? What's your guess?
I have no idea. I honestly can't see... I'm sorry, do you have any names in particular? Because I can't see who that they would go for.
I have no idea if this would work. I haven't looked at it. I haven't played with it on the trade machine. Brooke Lopez seems like the best case scenario, right? Like, that would be the guy if they were to swing for the fences and say, look, we're going to go get a guy, Brooke Lopez. We know what Pat Riley does. He buys when the people are selling low. And that's what he did with Dragic. And that's what he looks for. As any good person in charge of these things would do. Brooke Lopez, the Heat might be able to get him away from the Nets. I don't know what for. I have no idea. Maybe it would take a 2030 first-round pick or whatever. But That would be my best guess. I don't know how. I don't know the parameters of it, but that would be my best guess.
I can't. I mean, I think that they would move Lopez because, you know, Brooklyn is obviously falling apart there. But I would seriously start to question Ryle's judgment if he makes a move for Lopez, which isn't to say that he hasn't been great this year. He's been the only bright spot on an otherwise very bleak season. But given his injury history, I mean, can you really make a move for a guy like Brook Lopez? I mean, that doesn't seem likely, does it?
It doesn't seem likely. And that's why I said, like, I have no idea where how it happens, if it happens, how it could happen. But, like you said, we were wrong last year. We didn't see how they would make a move for Dragic, and they did.
Well, that was their – you could say that because of Whiteside's strong play at center, you could say that the point guard position was their weakness. Like, the point guard position – you weren't getting any kind of production out of the point guard position. So you had to make a move to build that up, and you were able to pry a guy like Dragic, who now people are saying would have left Phoenix anyway, and you didn't have to include those two first-round picks, but whatever. It's neither here nor there. It's happened, and there's just no point in lamenting it. So if you had to say what's Miami's biggest position of need at this point, I don't know that they have any, you know, because you've got a good starting point guard. You've got a good shooting guard. You've got even a good backup shooting guard in Gerald Green. At the small forward position, you've got, you know, Deng is serviceable, and you've got a very good one in Winslow. You know, you've got Bosch, a power forward. Either you're looking to upgrade the center position past Whiteside because you're just done with them, and as we talked about, part of your long-term plans, or I just can't see them making a move. I mean, for a bit role player, maybe you're frustrated, you know, internally with McRoberts' health, and you don't think he's going to get any better. But he's been working with a team, and theoretically, he should be out there within the next week or two. And maybe we're overstating how bad this stretch could be. Maybe, you know, you get Dragic back next week, you get McRoberts back at around or near the same time, and all of a sudden you go on a 5-6-7, you know, game win streak. You need something like that, and certainly all of a sudden the trade deadline rolls around. It doesn't seem as dire or necessary for you to make a move, but I'm looking at the position of need for Miami, and I don't know that they have one.
Yeah, I think the rest of the season right now is determining whether or not Whiteside is the future. And according to Dan Le Batard on his own radio show, what he says is the Heat go back and forth on this, just like we do as fans and as bloggers and people that kind of cover the team go back and forth on this. Is Whiteside the long-term answer? And they're going back and forth as we're going back and forth, and that's really what the rest of the season is about, is trying to determine if a team with Whiteside at center is viable and if paying him the amount of money that he's going to command in free agency is viable. Really, that's the question, right? It would be great to just have him if it's willing to pay him the amount of money that he's going to command and want, and it's going to need to keep him.
Has there been any player more valuable over the last season and a half than him, considering what his salary is? I mean,
salary standpoint, not like just in general, like
production for money's sake. You know, for what you get out of a guy making as little as Whiteside makes, relatively speaking, I don't think you get as much production.
I mean, I would still take Steph Curry at the contract that he's at. You know, I mean, those are two very separate salaries, but there's the amount of money that Curry makes compared to possibly being the best player in the NBA and the most valuable player in the NBA. Yeah. But I, you know, he's making less than $1 million, and that's just so hard to comprehend in what he's doing. It's great. And that's why we go back to that thing. It's like, it's great to have this version of the team that you want, but it's not, realistically, you're not always going to get the perfect team that you want to have. I mean, you build with the players that you have, right? Like, that's just those are the cards that you're dealt, and you have to make the best of them. And the Heat might be in a position where they don't get to just cherry pick the free agents that they want, like they did basically when they had LeBron. They're going to have to play with the cards that they're dealt and make the best of it. And they're going to have to determine right now. And those things aren't different. Like, determining whether or not Whiteside's a long-term answer and trying to win this year aren't separate things. And the last comment I want to have in regards to this whole Hassan Whiteside thing, if he's long-term, a lot of people are saying, if he's not long-term, you have to trade him by the deadline. And I disagree with that. Only for the reason that, you know, the Heat aren't bad this year. You know, this is a tough stretch that they're going in. But to reach the pinnacle of where they could possibly get to this year, they're going to need Whiteside, right? Because they're not trading him for an impact player that's going to make a huge difference. Like, that's just not, his salary doesn't, it's just not going to work. So I don't see it as a bad thing that you just ride this out, see what you get out of Whiteside, because that's really the best way to determine his value, especially get into the playoffs with Whiteside and then see what he does in the playoffs, because that ultimately will determine his value more than the 82 games in the regular season. It's what he can do in the playoffs when the game slows down, etc., everything that we know. I say you just ride it out with Whiteside, and if by the end of the playoffs you decide, you know what, that's not the guy we want, let's let him walk in free agency, I don't have a problem with the Heat not getting anything back in return. I don't have a problem with the Heat just letting him walk and saying, we're not going to blow $18 to $20 million a year on Whiteside. We're going to go in a different direction. We determined that we want to go in a different direction. We don't want Whiteside at that price. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the Heat losing Whiteside for nothing. Usually I have an issue with that, but in this case, it's different. It's unique. I don't have a problem with it.
Since we're both basically in agreement that a move isn't going to be made, clearly they're going to blow up the roster.
Right.
Right. I just want to get that out there.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's look forward to these games. Friday at Denver, Sunday. I guess we can look forward to it. That's a really... we'll talk about it and cover our eyes while we do it. Friday at Denver, Sunday at the Thunder. Tuesday... we get to host Milwaukee. That'll be fun. And then Wednesday, again on the road against Washington, that kicks off what is a 5-game road trip. So, Denver, that looked like a win. Or no, we even said that they might lose that game, right? Because we never play well in Denver in that altitude. And right. They just beat the Warriors. So they're riding high. So that they're either going to have a letdown or they're going to be like, fuck yeah, we're the best team in the NBA. Let's beat the Heat here. And then they will.
I think they'll go for the letdown. You know, this is a pretty inconsistent team. Yeah, I mean, certainly Miami needs it. Hopefully, the shellacking by the Clippers, by an injury ravaged Clippers team, is enough of a wake up call for them to realize, well, yeah, we can't afford to lose games that we have to win against pretty poor competition. The Nuggets aren't at full strength. They're not a good team to begin with. You have to find a way to beat them. I know it's the altitude. I know it's a problem to play in Denver. You have to find a way to beat them. So I'm going to say that they'll win in Denver.
I agree. Sunday, they've won the last 5 games. The Heat are undefeated on Sundays this season. They've played 5 times this season on Sunday. They've played the Thunder on Sunday. The last time they played the Thunder, they beat the Thunder in a very good, entertaining game. But the Thunder are good. They're playing better. The Heat are playing possibly the worst they've played all year. Not feeling good about that one.
Yeah, I'm not either. Yeah. I think...
that's a loss.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think Cantor can match up. Steven Adams can match up with Whiteside pretty well. I think Ibaka versus Bosch is a pretty tough matchup there.
The thing with Steven Adams, right, is that he's going to bring the energy every night regardless. And Whiteside is so, I feel like, selfish with his own stats. If he's not getting the ball, you know, if he doesn't get the ball for 2 to 3 minutes, he's pouting, right? And
Adams doesn't care.
Adams does not care.
He's selfless, and compared to you know, maybe selfish play from Whiteside, he is selfless. He doesn't care.
As long as his mustache is on camera, he's fine.
That's right.
That's all he cares about.
I think that's exactly it. And the man bun, of course, which has gotten some publicity of late.
Right. Yeah. Tuesday, hosting Milwaukee. That's got to be a win, right? Like, the Heat, Milwaukee's one of the worst teams in the NBA this year. Defense is awful.
Have we played the Bucks yet? I can't recall. I don't think we have. I'm trying to think. I don't know that we have. And generally, Milwaukee has our number. I don't know. We've always had a problem playing Milwaukee. No, yeah.
We haven't played Milwaukee this year, and you're right. Milwaukee's long. They're athletic. They're young. They're usually energized. But Milwaukee's been better in the last 2 years than they've been this year. Something's up.
I'll never forget something I remember hearing from a broadcast a few years ago from Tony Fiorentino, and ever since he mentioned it, it's always been true. He said that the worst game after on a road trip is the game you get back, because you come back and there's a kind of comfort in living on the road all the time. You know, you live for 2 weeks on the road, you're going from hotel to hotel. It's a very much of a bonding experience, and you're focused on that. Then you come back to Miami, and it's great to be home, but it's also a distraction. You've been gone for 2 weeks. Wives or significant others are going to get into your face and your business and trying to find out what's going on. You've got 2 weeks' worth of report cards to catch up on. He's right, though. I mean, that was a very astute observation that I had never considered before, because everybody thinks, oh, hell, 2 weeks on the road, that's going to be difficult. You come back after 2 weeks. I know it happens to me, and I'm not an NBA player with a mansion and all the different things that come with that, but sometimes I go on vacation. I need a vacation from my vacation, because
Oh,
you've got
absolutely.
you got to do laundry, and you got to pay bills, and you got to catch up on all the stuff. Your house isn't clean, and all the things that you have to that you could have done or normally would have done during the 2 weeks that you were home, and said you're gone. You know, not that I'll go on vacation for 2 weeks, but you know that's what the Heat have been doing basically. So that's a tough game. Milwaukee's a tough opponent. They're long, like and athletic, as you said, and it's a bad game. So I think it's a loss.
Wow. And then Wednesday at Washington, so second game of back-to-back, because that Milwaukee game's on a Tuesday. The Heat destroyed Washington that first time, but Washington shot very poorly. They missed open shots. I mean, the Heat, don't want to take anything away from them, played very, very good defense in that game. And they're a better team than the Wizards are. But we can't expect a repeat of Washington's poor offensive performance in that game. That's going to be a tough game, especially because it's on the road. Second game of back-to-back. First
Oh,
game of a
God,
long
yeah.
road, another long road trip, so the Heat might just be like, oh my God, another one of these. It doesn't get easier, basically, is what we're saying. I think that the
No.
Heat, I think Miami goes 3-1, but I've also been extremely optimistic all season. But I'm saying that because they can't really afford to go anything worse than 3-1.
I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go 1-3.
Wow. You think they beat Denver and then lose the next three, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that just might be the start, because looking ahead past that, Toronto at Chicago, even Brooklyn, they already beat us this season. I mean, in the end, you got Milwaukee at home after that. We could be looking at a 1-7 stretch.
Oof. Not good.
Not good at all.
Blow it up. Trade Dragic. Cut Whiteside.
Well, look, by the end of when's the trade deadline? February what?
Mid-February.
Mid-February, right?
Yeah.
By that point, we could be looking at a team that's a couple games under 500. Right now, they're a couple games over it, but I mean, they could just as easily, they're with their 5 games over 500. I mean, if they go 1-7, 1-6, let's say 2-5 over the next few games, that's not very good. That's 2 games over 500. That's not good enough. I think Riley might look to make a move.
What
Oh
kind of
well.
move? Like,
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't. He's not the kind of guy to be patient enough to sit still for the summer. It's not like he's.
February
I mean,
18th, by the way. Sorry. February
all right.
18th is the trade deadline. I mean, the name that people keep bringing up is Goran Dragic. Is it time to just cut bait?
Oh, with
And
Dragic?
because, well, here's the thing with Dragic, right? Is that he has a high salary, so he can command a good player in return. What the hell do you trade Dragic for is my question.
Right.
Is who's taking Dragic and for what? And the name, and you know, I've heard Dragic to Brooklyn for Brook Lopez and stuff. But then what do
Hasn't
you do?
he been linked to New York?
Yeah, I've heard that too for Carmelo, right?
Right.
But
You
there's
package
no way the
him and
Knicks do
Justice
that.
Winslow?
There's no way the Knicks do that. Even if Pat Riley calls the Knicks and says, like, look, we'll give you Dragic and Justice Winslow. Carmelo Anthony is playing so well right now, and he's got such a thing right now with Kristaps Porzingis. I don't think they do that. There's no way.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm almost tempted and curious to see what would happen if he did.
I think it
You
would be really
packet.
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Johnson and Udra here on the roster. You move Dragic, Winslow, and Whiteside maybe, and you bring in Carmelo.
I don't think you can throw Whiteside in that deal. There's no way. Because if you bring in Carmelo, then really what you want is a front line of Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, and Hassan Whiteside, and you could play and Dwayne, and then you have Dwayne Wade as shooting guard, and you can really slow the game down where you're playing some ISO stuff. You know, you're doing a lot of.
But doesn't Melo play mostly the four at this point?
Carmelo?
Yeah, doesn't he play mostly the four?
I think he switches because, you know, you have Robin Lopez and Kristaps Porzingis, you know, at the four and five.
Good point. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, but he definitely does play four, and that would be great to have Carmelo Anthony play some four with Bosch sliding over the five when Whiteside's not in. You know, you obviously have that LeBron type versatility, and Carmelo's playing very well this year. I mean, he's passing more, he's, you know, shooting more efficiently, not shooting as many shots. You know, he's getting his teammates involved. He's doing all the things that you want him to do, playing better defense. I just don't think even Carmelo would, the Knicks would probably run that by him and be like, no, I want to stay here. Why would I go to Miami right now? We got a good thing going.
Yeah, but it's not, I mean, I don't know how, certainly Porzingis has a bright future ahead of him, but the team as it's currently constructed needs to go through some change. I think Porzingis becomes the obvious building block that you want to start the foundation for the team. But does that include, you know, Robin Lopez? Does that include Aaron Aflalo? I mean, that team's going to go through various transformations before they get to where they are, and maybe that includes, you know, making a move to trade Carmelo. You get a point guard like Dragic and a young small forward like Justice Winslow. That's an interesting team there, you know? It's something to consider.
Something to consider. I just don't think New York would do it. I mean, we got to remember it's New York, right? You got to get a star, I think, in return for Carmelo Anthony. And Dragic, as good as he is, he's not a star, right? He's not somebody that the media just eats up.
No. No.
So
I don't know that he's necessarily a huge upgrade over Calderon either. I mean...
Well, you know, Calderon's a good three-point shooter, and he's a,
yeah,
you know, in that triangle offense, it's really what you're looking at. But anyway, do you trade Dragic is a whole other question. I don't know. I think this is a lot. We knew going into the year that this team doesn't fit right, that the Heat are going to, and Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and Andy Ellsberg, they're going to have to make decisions on who do we need to keep. Who do we need to let go? Because this team obviously doesn't work together. We're going to figure this out. This is a very transitional year. They're going to have to figure out what pieces are necessary, and then what pieces are the pieces that they need to build around, and what pieces that they're going to have to say, you know what, let's cut our losses right now, and let's build around one identity. Because they don't have an identity right now. But they're good enough. The good thing is, and we sound so negative, the good thing is they are good enough. They're going to get through this road trip. They're good enough to make the playoffs, right? They're going to be better than they were last year. They'll make the playoffs. And then once they're in the playoffs, they have an opportunity to win in the first round. And I think right now, I think expectations are second round. You get to the second round. If you get past that, great. If not, still way better than being in the lottery. Right?
Sure.
It seems really – like that's not what Heat fans want to hear, right? But
no, it isn't.
That's kind of, I think, where we're at.
They won an Eastern Conference Finals matchup versus LeBron where they somehow find a way to beat a healthy Cleveland team and coast all the way to the finals where they meet with the Golden State Warriors and then have a much better matchup where Draymond Green goes up against Hassan Whiteside for six or seven games and Hassan Whiteside finally proves victorious and shows him that small ball is not the way to go. Then Whiteside, fresh off a championship, signs for $10 million a year and becomes a cornerstone of the franchise for the next five seasons.
It's just going to be so tough going down the stretch. I just looked at the schedule. It's just so many at signs. And the Heat, they go on a three-game homestand just twice the rest of the way.
Nice.
That's not – and a lot of at signs. A lot of at signs.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. I mean,
a lot of back to back.
It's a different outlook than we had even a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I know we hadn't done a podcast in a while, but man, I think we were a lot more favorable about what was going on. And I don't know what happened.
That's what we do here on the Heat Check. We're just up and down. We're really nice. we ride the wave. It's good. All right. Well, that I think wraps it up. Thanks for joining me, David, as always, and thanks for listening to the Heat Check podcast. You can find it on iTunes. The Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Podcast Network that is now on Blog Talk Radio. So be sure to check that out and all the great podcasts that are over there. Check out allyoucaneat.com, where this podcast is regularly posted, as well as Hardwood Paroxysm. And subscribe, say nice things about us, because we really appreciate it. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks, Dave.
You got it.
Finds a slinky back upon